If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome back to AI Unraveled, your strategic daily briefing on the business impact of artificial intelligence. It is the week of November 24th to November 30th, 2025, and the industry is shifting beneath our feet. This week, the godfather of AI, Ilya Sutskever, dropped a bombshell that the age of massive scaling might officially be over. Meanwhile, a leak reveals OpenAI is quietly preparing to turn ChatGPT into an ad-supported machine, and a new Chinese model just achieved gold medal status at the Math Olympiad, proving that reasoning is no longer a U.S. monopoly. We are also unpacking the AI iceberg that threatens 11% of the U.S. workforce and why Alibaba's new smart glasses are a direct shot at Meta. Let's unravel the news.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. You gave us quite a stack of sources this week, a really intense look at the state of AI. And if the last few months felt like an acceleration, well, the week of November 24th to the 30th, 2025, this wasn't just another news cycle.
No, not at all. The consensus in these reports is that this was a genuine inflection point. The industry is moving out of what everyone called the growth at all costs era.
That chaotic time of just chasing hype and spending whatever it took.
Exactly. And now we're in a new phase. The analysts are calling it a structural recalibration.
Structural recalibration. That sounds a lot less like a gold rush and more like a high stakes remodeling project. So what does that mean for you, our listener, trying to figure out where the smart money is going?
It means we're shifting from, you know, just building bigger to actually checking the foundations. Mm-hmm. This recalibration is happening across three key dimensions all at once. The infrastructure, the actual capability of the models, and the societal boundaries that are being hit. So our mission today is to unpack those three things. We're talking about the fracturing hardware monopoly, the pivot from just scaling up to genuine reasoning, and the shockwaves hitting everything from jobs to, believe it or not, human biology. The goal is for you to walk away with a clear roadmap of what actually matters right now.
All right, let's start at the very bottom of the stack then, the chips. For years, NVIDIA's dominance seemed like a law of physics. You paid the NVIDIA tax because they had the hardware, and more importantly, that CUDA software moat.
That bedrock is finally showing some major cracks.
And the first big crack was a shocker.
A huge one. The news that OpenAI, with Microsoft's backing, managed to negotiate a 30% cost reduction on NVIDIA hardware.
30%? That's incredible. How do you even do that when one company basically controls the entire supply?
You have to have a credible alternative. And they finally had one. Google's specialized chips.
The TPUs.
Specifically, the TPU V7 Ironwood. Hi. They're custom designed for training large models. OpenAI used the viability and the price of those TPUs as a benchmark.
Ah, so they could walk in and say, look, we can get this performance for this price over there, match it, or we seriously consider switching.
Exactly. And that move, for the first time, introduced real price elasticity into a market that had been totally inelastic.
And you could see it instantly in the market's reaction. NVIDIA saw a temporary loss of, $250 billion in value just from that news.
It was a signal. The perception of an unbreakable monopoly is dissolving. The strategic implication here is huge. For so long, NVIDIA's real power wasn't just the chip. It was the CUDA ecosystem, that software lock-in.
Right. It was too painful to rewrite everything to switch.
But now the buyer power of these huge AI labs is starting to rival the supplier power of the chip maker. They're building abstraction layers to, you know, diversify away from CUD. They want options.
Okay, so while the hardware wars are heating up in the West, this connects to the geopolitics, right? This compute arbitrage loophole you pointed out. The U.S. is trying to block advanced chips from getting to China.
But the Chinese tech firms have found a pretty ingenious workaround.
What are we talking about here? Alibaba, ByteDance.
Those are the big ones, yeah. They're bypassing the U.S. restrictions by setting up or just leasing data centers offshore. Think Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia.
So the chips, like the advanced NVIDIA H20s, can be legally imported into those countries.
That's the first step. Then they just transmit their raw training data over the internet to that offshore facility. The model gets trained there.
And then they just download the finished product.
They retrieve the most valuable part, The model waits. That's the intelligence. It crosses the border as digital information. So the physical blockade on the chips doesn't really matter. The intelligence gets through.
They're paying a premium for it, I assume, but they're staying in the game.
They're paying a latency tax and a lease premium, but it lets them maintain capability parity. It's a necessary strategic move for them.
That's the perfect transition from the hardware to the actual capability. Because the question is, what are people doing with all this compute? We heard Ilya Sutskever claim the age of scaling is over.
And this week's news really validates that. The focus is shifting away from just parameter count making models bigger to sophisticated reasoning.
It's a move toward quality over just raw quantity.
Right. And we're seeing that smaller, smarter systems can outperform the giant brute force models by basically mimicking human deliberation, what psychologists call system two thinking.
And the case study for this is DeepSeek Math V2. This thing is incredible. It hit the gold medal standard, solving 5 out of 6 problems at the IMO 2025 level.
That is just staggering performance. But the how is what matters. It uses a system they call generator verifier meta verifier.
Okay, break that down for me.
The generator proposes a bunch of different solutions. Then the verifier acts like a really strict critic, checking all the logical steps. Then the meta verifier actually checks the verifier's work to make sure the critique itself is sound.
So it's basically the model having an internal debate with itself until it's absolutely certain it has the right answer.
That's a perfect way to put it. It's a self-correction loop. And this validates a whole new strategic resource, test time compute.
Meaning the computation you use while it's generating the answer.
Yes. Spending compute cycles at the moment of inference is turning out to be a more efficient path to intelligence than just spending massively on pre-training.
Which completely changes the cost structure of AI in the future. And this idea of doing things, not just chatting, brings us to Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.5, the agentic engineer.
Anthropic is really pushing the envelope here. They're claiming Opus 4.5 scored higher on their internal software engineering exam than any human candidate ever. And it got an 80.9% pass rate on a very tough benchmark.
So how is this different from a co-pilot, which we're all getting used to? This sounds like a whole different ballgame.
A co-pilot helps you. An autopilot works for you. Opus 4.5 can handle long horizon tasks, maintain context across hundreds of files in a code base, and this is the critical part, it debugs its own work.
It finds and fixes its own mistakes.
Its own mistakes and mistakes in the legacy code. This could change the economics of software development overnight. You're shifting from expensive, sometimes inconsistent human labor to highly consistent AI labor.
If the autopilot engineer is here, we have to talk about the education crisis that's brewing, especially with what Google is doing with Gemini 3.
You're talking about the Nano Banana Pro.
Yeah, that name. But the capability is what's terrifying for educators.
It is. This model can solve handwritten exam problems straight from an image, which is bad enough for cheating. But the killer feature is that it can output the solution in the student's own handwriting style.
Oh, wow. I hadn't grasped that detail. That's the Achilles heel, because it defeats the most basic form of verification.
Exactly. How does a teacher prove the human didn't write it? It makes the standard take-home exam completely obsolete.
So what's the solution then?
Well, Andrej Karpathy is quoted in the sources saying that AI detectors are doomed to fail. The AI will always be a step ahead.
So assessment has to go back to the classroom, proctored exams, oral defenses.
Yes, and you have to fully embrace the AI as a tutor in the learning process itself. You shift from trying to catch cheaters to actually verifying proficiency in a controlled environment.
These capabilities are just colliding with the real world so fast. And that brings us to segment 3, societal and ethical shocks. Let's start with the most basic problem. Money.
The math here is just brutal. OpenAI has about 800 million weekly users on the free tier. The inference costs for running these powerful reasoning models are staggering.
Subscriptions alone can't possibly cover that.
Not even close. Which led to the leaked confirmation that OpenAI is deploying an advertising network right inside ChatGPT.
They're calling it the Bazaar model. What does that mean? How is it different from a Google search ad?
It's meant to be much more contextual, woven into the conversation. So if you ask for a travel itinerary for Paris, the response might include a sponsored hotel or a recommended flight seamlessly integrated into the plan.
So it's directly challenging Google's core business, but at what cost?
The cost is user trust. If you know the AI is incentivized to sell you something, can you still trust that its advice is objective? It's a huge risk.
And that risk to trust is nothing compared to the risk to jobs. this MIT and Oak Ridge National Laboratory study, the Labor Iceberg Index. This is probably the most shocking number in the entire stack.
It really is. The study concludes that 11.7% of the U.S. workforce is replaceable by existing AI technology right now.
And that represents, what was the wage figure?
$1.2 trillion in annual wages.
$1.2 trillion. And this isn't some far-off future prediction. This is based on AI that exists today.
That's the key. And the iceberg metaphor is there to show us that the media is focused on the wrong thing. The visible tip of the iceberg layoffs in tech, in coding, that's only about 2.2% of the total risk.
So where is the submerged mass, the 9/10 of the problem that's underwater?
It is overwhelmingly in middle-skill administrative roles. Human resources, payroll, logistics coordinators, medical billing and coding. The jobs that are about synthesizing and routing information.
And that means it's not just a coastal tech problem.
Not at all. This risk is distributed across all 50 states. The American heartland isn't immune because every single company relies on this administrative middle class.
This is also forcing us to confront some really difficult bioethical questions. The bio-AI convergence. Let's look at the two extremes here.
On one end, you have the controversy, the perfect baby startups like Preventative and Nucleus Genomics. They're commercializing embryo selection for IVF.
Using what they call polygenic risk scores, or PRS, what is that exactly?
A PRS is basically a genetic scorecard. Mm-hmm. It's an algorithm that looks at thousands of genetic markers to predict the likelihood of complex traits, not just disease risk, but things like height or even intelligence.
So parents can select embryos based on predicted non-disease traits. Critics are calling it consumer eugenics.
And that's the fear, that you're creating a world of biological inequality where genetic advantages can be bought. That's the enhancement side of the coin.
But then you contrast that with the cure side.
Exactly. You have Harvard Medical School's AI, PopEVE. It's also analyzing genetics, but it's trained on evolutionary history to diagnose rare genetic diseases. It's already found over 100 new disease-causing mutations. Same technology, profoundly different application.
It's a stark contrast. Before we wrap up, there's one more thing we have to hit. This security flaw, adversarial poetry.
This is a wild one. It's a huge crack in the current safety architecture. Researchers found that if you ask a model for harmful instructions, like how to build something dangerous, but you frame the request as a poem or a creative writing exercise,
the model just does it.
It bypasses the safety filters over 90% of the time on some models. The model gets so focused on fulfilling the stylistic constraint of being a poem that it forgets the safety rules.
It shows how brittle the current safety mechanisms are.
It absolutely does. It shows that RLHF, reinforcement learning from human feedback, is not robust when a creative directive conflicts with the safety directive.
And just quickly, the supply chain risk. The mixed panel data breach at OpenAI.
A classic security lesson. Your defenses are only as strong as your weakest link. OpenAI itself might be secure, but their third-party analytics vendor got breached, exposing user emails and IDs. Vendor risk is now a critical vulnerability.
Okay, this has been an incredibly dense deep dive. It really brings us back to that core idea in the sources. The great filtering. The era of easy money and just scaling up is over.
It is. You have the capital filter, where money is moving from training to inference. You have the labor filter, which is that massive displacement risk for the middle class we just talked about.
And the other filters are just as profound.
The biological filter, that tension between enhancement and cure. And the geopolitical filter, you know, China's compute arbitrage versus the heavy-handed regulation we see coming from places like the EU.
It really feels like we're at a moment of huge strategic decisions. And given everything we've discussed, the shift away from these massive expensive training runs toward massive inference fleets running these complex verification loops for every single query. It raises a final critical question.
Right. What is the core business commodity of the future? Is it the data you train on, which is, you know, becoming saturated and maybe less of a differentiator? Or is it the raw computational time you spent verifying every single answer, ensuring quality and reasoning right at the point of use?
That's the strategic choice.
That's the decision that will define who wins the next decade of AI. Is your value in your historical data or in your real-time verification?
That wraps up this week's strategic rundown. The key takeaway? The easy wins of simply making models bigger are gone. We are now in the trenches of reasoning efficiency and business viability. If you are building your enterprise strategy for 2026, ask yourself, are you optimizing for the age of research or just burning cash on compute? Stop reading static reports. Start leading with insight. We build custom 5-minute AI audio briefings tailored specifically for your C-suite, automated, strategic, and zero noise. Secure your executive intelligence asset today by emailing us or clicking the link in the show notes. Until next time, keep unraveling the data.